CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. It's that time of the week again.
Yes.
Hello, 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 hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Can you hear me? Am I coming through your speakers properly? Are you wearing headphones or are you using a larger system for output of audio in your household? Or in your motor car? Or in your workplace? Or are you using the speaker on your cellular telephone?
So many options.
So many. It used to be, can
not,
you hear
not,
us?
Not like
no, can you hear us in your radio? Now you've got lots of different options. All right, well, here we are. It's Monday, and yes, you are going to start this week with us. How lucky are you? Isn't that great? I mean, you know, you could start with assholes. You know, like really terrible people.
Well,
maybe we are assholes. Yes, okay. We could be assholes.
Sometimes.
All right. So, what's happening, everybody? How was your weekend, Leanne and Sia? What did you get up to?
Well, you guys were the ones with no plans.
Stayed
and that,
that
was
way.
Left open ended.
Stayed
so
that
what
way.
What happened there?
I did family stuff. I did family stuff on Saturday. I actually saw quite a lot of my little nephews this weekend, which was nice. Their parents were away, so they were staying with my parents, their grandparents. So they were around a lot, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to see these little shits as much as I can. So I did. No, it was good. It was really good fun. You know, what's interesting about watching little kids is because they're 5 and 7 now. And you see their little personalities coming out, huh? And, I mean, they can be really, really clever and really manipulative and very crafty and sly. And then you can also see them just being like happy children. And like if they were doof and they didn't have any plans for themselves and they didn't want certain things and get what they wanted, sometimes I'd be a bit disappointed in them, to be perfectly honest. But then I sometimes see how they wrap my parents around their little finger, and I think we wouldn't have got away with that as kids. My parents would have just smacked us. We'd never have got away with any of that stuff. So grandchildren have special privileges, but it's quite sweet to see. So anyway, that was fun. Just some interesting observations of kind of, and they're nice kids. I like them. You know, it would be horrible if I was their uncle and I didn't like them and I thought they were little horrible tyrants and shitheads, but they're not, thank God. They're nice kids.
Gosh.
And you asked, what did you get up to?
Also, my plans didn't change much at all. I had these grandiose plans of doing a lot of work, but I realized I hadn't watched DSTV in a long time.
Uh-huh.
So, and you know,
so you canceled
on catch up.
You canceled your subscription like the rest of us.
No, au contraire. You know, if you go on catch up, those series episodes are only available for a short time.
Yeah.
So I ended up going into panic mode and watching everything that I could before it expired.
Wow.
So that was fun, but yeah.
So do you get
really relaxing and
you get a panic if you don't watch a series before it expires?
Especially if I've got quite far in a series and I've forgotten about it and I look back and I think, shit, what did happen in the next episode? And that episode's already gone. I do get a little bit panicky.
It's so weird. I do not get any kind of anxiety over that stuff. Even if I have a real love for a show, when I get to it, I'll get to it. I've just got no pressure on that front at all.
No, it annoys me because I'll often just in my daily life think about one of the episodes of one of the shows.
No.
And then if ever I want to get into it again at a later stage, I've missed out on a whole chunk and then I don't bother watching it at all.
No. No, I know what you mean.
These are older people, isolation, semi-lockdown problems, you know?
Well, I noticed you... You now have changed your little emoji to a woman with a bun. Is that because that's how you see yourself now?
No, I'm. When I changed it on the day, I was wearing one of those sort of high buns.
Yeah.
But also, my hair isn't blonde anymore because I haven't been to the hairdresser in ages. So I changed the hair color.
I just thought that the bun is kind of like, okay, I'm an old woman now. I'm admitting that. I think it's too soon.
No. Is it a bit matronly?
I think it's too soon to be having a bun in your emoji. I mean, you know, maybe in 5 years, 6 years time, okay. But like it's a bit young. I think there's still life within the old dog yet. Yeah, I mean, see, help me out here. I don't want to be the only one trying to pull her back from old age.
But you know what it is as well? You know, wearing a bun on top of your head is actually, I mean, it's not as trendy as it used to be.
Yeah.
But it's a trendy-ish thing. But this emoji makes it look like an old gran.
Yeah, it does. That's why because it was my Bali's birthday yesterday, so we all sent her a happy birthday, and she was like appreciative and sweet, and then Leanne sent some emoji of her, and I was like, oof, it's an old lady emoji. It's immediately what I thought.
Yeah, I need to find a better one.
Yeah, I think it's time to just go and redesign that thing. Wow. It's like someone I know has an emoji, but in the emoji, she looks like a Muslim woman, and she's got like yellow skin, so like a Chinese woman who's in Muslim clothing, and it just doesn't make sense at all. It's stupid. It's unrelated to how she looks in any way. And I'm like, you can't use this emoji. It's not you.
You know what's what?
Are we so stupid that this matters to us in 2021? I mean, is this what we've come to?
Yes. Kinda.
This is what matters. Like, oh, get your emoji right, because you can't have a fucking emoji that doesn't suit you.
Exactly.
I'm just so glad.
Imagine our ancestors listening to this conversation going, wow, to have those problems. Yes.
I'm just really glad that you didn't say to me, Leanne, you look a lot older than your emoji. You should adjust your emoji. Your emoji. That would have been terrible.
Yeah, that would have been
so
worse.
I'm glad it happened the way that it did. Mm.
Sometimes I do get into a bit of a mild, very mild panic.
I don't believe it.
Just a mild one, because this isn't as serious. When I think, ooh, you know, I've been in the sun for, you know, quite a while this week. Have I gone a shade darker? Which means then my emojis must go a shade darker. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because I go, no, people will think I'm trying to be something that I'm not. So, okay, then. While I send this thumbs up, I just need to make it a shade brown.
Well, luckily for you and Leanne and everyone else, we've got Dr. Hanan Bushkin on this morning, and he's going to talk to us about a savior complex, which is a really interesting problem a lot of people have. They don't even realize, but they have it. You know, we often talk about victim complexes, but if you have a savior complex.
Okay, when you play the victim.
Yeah, we'll talk about a savior complex with him this morning, and you know what? What I love about talking to him is you sometimes hear him say something and you go, that could be me. That could be.
Someone's got to get us thinking about this stuff.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we could go through our lives being complete assholes, as we mentioned.
Assholes, yes. Assholes, very important. So we'll get to that with him a bit later on. Yes, Sia, sorry.
Yeah, I ended up having a family-filled weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And actually slept over at my cousin's house over the weekend.
Yeah.
And it did quite a number on me.
How?
So they live in an estate, and it's one of those hectic, serious security estates where really, as you enter, you have to go through three different pit stops and give over your ID, fingerprint,
obviously,
scan your retina.
Yeah, obviously at that estate, the Karens are in charge because they love those security checks. You know, they don't realize that you hand in your ID and all of that, and nobody ever looks at that information ever again. And for most of us, it's just such a pain in the ass. You'll never go there again if you could possibly help it. So what do you have to do at the front gate? Do they ask you for your ID? They ask you to fill in a form.
Yeah.
You probably have to give...
Well, most of it is electronic, so already all of my details were loaded by my cousin before I even arrived.
Oh, my God.
To corroborate everything.
And then does she have to give you a PIN code or something as well?
Yeah. And then it's only when I've seen it in movies where they're like even... You know, when you're crossing the border in Mexico and the security guards have this... It looks like a spade, but
it's got a mirror on
actual,
it.
Yeah, it has a mirror. And they look underneath your car. Then they what? Check your food. Yeah,
for
it's a whole process.
For bums and for drugs.
Because heaven forbid, what are you bringing into the estate? But to really think about it, I was there for, I'd say, a little over 24 hours. Mm-hmm. It was such a psychological play on my mind.
Why?
To then be so at ease and to have your guards down emotionally and psychologically, where I'm like, actually, these people in these estates have a good thing going.
Well,
you know, I think for the rest of us, we don't understand how ready we are and how on the edge we are just in our daily lives in South Africa. Are our car doors locked? Do we have our, you know, when you're at the robots, make sure that your window is right up to make sure that someone can't reach in. And, you know, when you're at home, the burglar guard.
You're on constant alert. And in fact, Leanne, you were talking about this the other day, that you've now got the guard hut right outside your house. And you have to, you have like an extension cord going in there, and God knows what electricity you're paying for everything. But, you know, you kind of have to in your neighborhood. So Sia makes a really good point. And as irritating as those security arrangements are, and trust me, they bother the hell out of me as well. I hate them. Yeah. Because it's, especially if you're just going into, let's say you're going in to drop something off for a relative or a friend or whatever. And if you don't have the right code, or your code's expired, or you enter it wrong, oh my God, it's like getting into and out of Alcatraz. It's insane. And the fact that they have to check under your car for stowaways with a little mirror, like you're going to be smuggling in babies or something. I don't know what they, like, what do they think is going to happen? The fact is, though, that if you look at these estates, and they are the best places to live in South Africa, without a doubt. Mm. That's why everybody's trying to move into them, right? Not because everybody wants to have communal living, because frankly, I don't have a whole lot to do with my neighbors, and I live in an estate. And it's not because I don't like my neighbors. It's just because I didn't opt into having be part of a community. That's not what I'm in here for. I'm in here for the security and for the fact that I can walk around. I can be in a neighborhood where the government works, because that's what it is. It's like a mini government. So I was thinking about it over the weekend, because we drove out to the old family farm where, you know, we had to go and do some like maintenance on the, it sounds so macabre, but I promise you it isn't, on the family graveyard, because we go out there probably, you know, once a year to make sure everything's still all right, and got to make sure the grass is cut and make sure that the, you know, stones are all still piled on top of each other and that kind of crap. And on the way there, I just looked at what South Africa looks like and how badly managed this country is. First of all, I drove through a number of informal settlements, which are just, it's appalling how people have to live. And the fact that people in this country, after 27, 28 years of freedom and democracy, are probably living worse than they did when they lived in rural settlements in far away, far flung corners of the country, because they're so desperate to be close to the cities for work that they will live in the most horrible corrugated iron and galvanized zinc plate shacks, because they're desperate to live close to somewhere where they can earn money. They have nowhere to play the kids. They have nowhere to, there's no sewerage, there's no electricity, there's no road. People are living like animals, and this government doesn't give a shit about them. Furthermore, it's just a mess. Like there's litter everywhere. It's dirty. It's filthy. People are in squalor, absolute squalor, almost everywhere. And this is on our way out to, like, you know, the Northwest province, basically. And I just look at this and I go, this is government. This is what government have done. This is what this country, and I didn't want to start this morning moaning about government, but it's something I noticed, and you brought it up in contrast to the estates. Now, the estates are well run, okay? They have a gate. There's a security arrangement. So that's your Department of Safety and Security or your Department of Police. You've got
someone
who's looking after the environment. That's your Department of Internal Affairs and Tourism or whatever. They keep it clean. The street lights work. There's water. There's a provision for this and that. Some people have solar and, you know, that's your Department of Energy. All of those departments in a little estate are run properly. And they run properly because the people who live in those estates have a certain expectation of how they want to live. And they're prepared to pay for it. So everybody contributes. It's like a tax. The homeowner's levy or whatever it is. And you pay those fees and you get a good government. But you don't pay 40% of your income for this. And you get all of those things, right? If we could all live like the people in the estates live, and it's not about how much money they have. It's about being able to spend the money in the right places. We could all live like that. We could all have gardens. We could all have rubbish collected instead of just strewn on the streets. We could have running water provided. We could have hot water and geysers with solar connections that people have tried to install all over the country and they don't work. We could have security for everybody so people weren't attacked and robbed and murdered and raped. We could have that stuff available. People could live like the luckiest and best people in this country do live. But we've got useless people at the top. That's all. If we had better people managing things, it would work.
And these things, for me and my observation this weekend, go beyond just the superficial or the surface level things. You know, yes, it's one thing to, you know, they have a massive glass door at the entryway. And it's like, ugh. With no burglar bars. And that's unlocked, that stays right. Unlocked all the time. And you know, you can look past things like that, but it's even things like on Saturday afternoon, we went to, you know, we decided what we were going to have for dinner, and then we went to the clubhouse to go and collect it. So we just walked to the clubhouse, we got some dinner, and we walked back because everything is charged on the central system that they, you know, so they don't even carry cash. It's like that ease.
Yeah.
And then my cousin's little daughter was out playing with her friends, and they were running, and we didn't even know where they went. But it's not this, where are they?
Yeah, you don't panic that something could happen to them because you know they're in the estate and they're safe, right?
Gosh, yeah, look, I'm looking at these estates differently. You guys are onto something.
and don't get me wrong. I mean, we often mock and ridicule these estates a lot of the time because they do have these, like, nanny governments, some of them. Some of them are more nanny than others.
I mean, that's the thing you've got to deal with. They are consequences.
Sure.
Like, at the moment, if I want to have if I want to farm cats, if no one reports me, it'll be fine. Mm. Or if my cat gets into someone else's yard and has a fight with theirs and they moan at me, I can say, stuff you, cats roam, and just leave it.
Yeah, exactly.
But rules are rules in these places.
Well, I mean,
noise levels, all sorts of things.
Yeah, there are some of them that are like Australia and there's some of them that are more like Texas. So you just got to decide where you want to live. I'll say for the people who I live around, they don't give me a whole lot of trouble. I mean, on the occasion that I've had people here and it's been a party and there's been noise and we've been up late, I don't get complaints. My neighbors are very cool. They're very understanding. This weekend, my next door neighbor had a huge jumping castle out on the lawn for his kids from Friday afternoon until, I think, last night. And I wasn't bothered by that. You know, he kind of gives me a bit of leeway if I've got people around. And if his kids are having fun in a jumping castle, I give him the leeway. Nobody has to fight with each other. We don't need to, like, send each other a WhatsApp to make sure it's okay. We just understand. That's how...
This is against regulation.
Yeah, a bit of a quid pro quo, and everybody's happy. And if I go away for the weekend, I might say to him, can you just keep an eye on things? And he might ask me the same thing. And that's how you live. But you know, he does his thing and I do mine. And I don't really get along with my neighbors as best friends, but you don't have to. You just live together in the same geographical area. You make things work. But it is really amazing to me the difference between the way some people in this country live and the way others live. And you know, our natural inclination, just like last week when that stupid story about Jeff Bezos not paying tax came up, our inclination is to blame the rich people and to say, well, it must be because they're only thinking about themselves, or it must be because they're just lucky, or it must be because they took it from somebody. That's not the case at all. It's not their fault, just like it's not the poor people's fault. What they've done is they've made certain decisions in their lives. And I can guarantee you, most people who have enough money to live in an estate in this country are working their backsides off. They're not living off trust funds or off stolen money or off stolen land, frankly. They're probably first-generation buyers in many of those respects. So you can't bring that bullshit idea of like, oh, well, you know, eat the rich and then our problems will go away. If it wasn't for those people, who would be employing all the other people? And
who'd be bringing in the bulk of tax?
Correct. I mean, in this country especially, right, we know that there are probably about 2 to 3 million people who pay all the tax in South Africa, income tax. And income tax makes up a bigger proportion of the total government revenue than corporate tax does. I found out over the weekend, by a long way, found out over the weekend the reason that Jeff Bezos didn't pay any tax in 2018 is because he didn't sell any of his shares in Amazon. So you don't get taxed when you don't have an income. So in other words, Jeff Bezos was living off money that he made in 2015, 16, 17, let's say, because he's got a lot of it, right? He might have cashed out some money or might have paid himself a nice salary in 2017. He's the boss. He can do what he wants. But in 2018, he didn't pay himself anything. That's why he didn't pay any tax. But people go, oh, it's disgusting that Jeff Bezos didn't pay any tax in 2018. He didn't earn anything in 2018. He didn't need to because he'd earned enough the year before, but he paid tax that year. But of course, you don't understand that if you just simplify it in your head to, oh, he's worth how much? $200 billion or, I don't know, $500 billion or whatever it is that he's worth. And you go, well, he must pay half of that over to the government so that they can waste it? No. I'll tell you what, Jeff Bezos with $10 will do more than the government will with $100 every time. He'll create more value. He'll create more jobs. He'll end up spending that on things that will start the economy up in ways that government can only dream of. And if you still believe, if you're one of those people who still believes that giving government more money is the answer, all I have to say to you is Eskom. That's all. One word. And it'll sort out your argument. So I just wish, trust me, I'm not one of those people who thinks that it's fair in the world that certain people live in estates and that other people live in absolute squalor, because I saw both of those things in sparkling clarity this weekend. I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's cool to have extremely rich and extremely poor people, and the extremely poor people have zero going for them. The extremely rich people are, you know, holidaying in Capri. I don't think that's fair, but it is just the way that the world works. And you don't make it better by taking from this one to give to that one. What you do is you administer all the stuff better. You make sure that the person in the squatter camp can get a lawyer if he needs one, because the legal system works for him. You make sure that all of those people, the ones who are paying and the ones who can't afford to pay, are getting some level of government service, some basic level, like a tap that they can switch on, you know?
Gosh.
I mean, that's just like so obvious. Mm-hmm. And there is no reason why that shouldn't happen in this country. It's not as if we don't have any money. It's not as if we take in all the government taxes that we do in a year, that we can't spend that on making everyone's lives better. Instead, unfortunately, all people can see is inequality, so let's take from here and move to there. But it doesn't work like that. And if it did work like that, it would be a whole different universe that we'd live in. There is this thing called the Pareto Principle, which, I mean, we can get into, but I don't want to this morning. It's too heavy for a Monday, and we've already gone quite heavy. So let's look at some headlines, shall we? See what's happening in the world. There's quite a lot to talk about today, and I think we will start with, let me see. Leanne's cats. Yes, it's time for an update.
What?
headline news this morning. Leanne's cats. Let's go. Here is the official update. How many cats are there now, and how are they all doing? I'm serious.
I think they're four.
She says.
So I certainly have not collected any new animals over the years.
I'm proud of you.
I'm down to four. Yeah. Whittled down to four. They're all cats. And the one is really quite ill and on her way. So, and there's one that is behaving so badly that for the first time ever, I've thought about giving an animal up. Unless I can get some cat trainer in here. Oh gosh.
There are a whole lot of feral cats who live here near me, and you know, at night they come out and they fight with each other, and it sounds like murder. It sounds unbelievable. Yeah. They're just very, very vicious and loud. All right, I was kidding about the cats being a headline. Do you want to hear the real headlines? All right, the first one's from EWN. They say that SARS have seized illicit cigarettes worth 2.4 million rand in Gauteng. Now, I mean, of course it's a story, right? But we all know these cigarettes got their opportunity to come into the market during lockdown last year, right? No one was really...
Yeah, hugely.
No one was massively interested. It wasn't a huge illicit cigarette trade before then. There was a problem with it, sure. But the focus can really only have come in because, again, government decided to ban smoking. What a stupid decision. I said it at the time. Do you remember? I said, what are these morons thinking? That and banning liquor. And everyone was like, oh, no. Well, not everyone. A lot of people go, oh, no, it's very important that government keep us safe. And if Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, in all of her wisdom, thinks it's a good idea to ban cigarettes, then, you know, it might even persuade some people to stop smoking, some idiot said. And it didn't.
Nope.
Nobody who smoked in April of last year is a non-smoker now because of Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma or the ban on smoking during COVID. And it was stupid because it turns out cigarettes didn't make a goddamn difference in COVID terms. Idiots. So SARS have gone and seized 2.4 million rand in illicit cigarettes, which they found in Gauteng. They raided 22 shops in Kempton Park, Pretoria, and Johannesburg during a joint operation between the Revenue Service, the Department of Home Affairs, and the police this week. Officials also carried out operations at the Kopfontein border post in the northwest on Tuesday, where they found 5.5 million rands worth of illegal cigarettes in a tanker. That's how they're getting them across, in a tanker.
Jeez.
It must be difficult to smuggle those things in through a tanker because you have to seal it up afterwards, right? Anyway, the truck came from Botswana, had three false compartments, and the police's Sam Tselanyane said that the truck, which was pulling a trailer, came into South Africa from Zambia via Botswana. Upon further investigations, the driver reportedly disclosed that in the middle compartment of the trailer, there were illicit cigarettes. So I suppose well done to the cops. I'm not going to pretend that's the greatest thing they've ever done, though, because we've got real problems. Anyway, thousands of lives are at risk, according to the DA, on the subject of Gauteng ambulances. Now, here is something we really do need to worry about. The DA in Gauteng said thousands of lives are at risk because ambulance services in some of the province, this Gauteng province, their COVID-19 hotspots are not operating. The party claims the city of Johannesburg suspended its emergency ambulance service last week because of vehicle insurance and medical supply problems.
Oh, my goodness.
So good luck. If you call an ambulance this weekend, good luck.
Administration 101.
I know. And this is supposedly the government that I've just talked about pretending to care about COVID. Don't believe you guys. I don't believe you. You can't do things
properly.
Yeah,
if you're into saving lives, and please pay your tax and get your supplies ready for your ambulances.
Yeah, you'd think. Like, there's a basic thing, but they can't even do that properly. So busy. Cyril's so busy hobnobbing at the G7. I don't know if you saw him talking to all his friends at the G7. None of them wearing masks. None of them were wearing masks or social distancing. They put it on as a show for the cameras. And then later on, you see pictures of all of them chilling with each other, shaking hands, patting each other on the back, all these government leaders, all these parasites who we've elected all over the world to supposedly make things better. All of them congratulating themselves on how well they've managed COVID, and they haven't. Sons of bitches. All pretending everything's good. You got Cyril there, glad-handing the other guys. They're all smacking each other on the back, saying, oh, well done, you know, Boris and Justin Trudeau and Emmanuel Macron and Angela Merkel, all so proud of each other. And then they get back to their countries and they say, you've got to put on a mask. Who do you think you are?
No, they probably had testing before and then rapid testing on the day.
So what? How do you know that?
And also,
did you see it?
And also, no, I don't know that.
Exactly.
But I think maybe you're being a bit harsh.
I'm not being harsh. These are the people.
Also,
rules for thee and different stuff for me. That's what they are. These are not people you can trust. Have you not learned that during the last year, Leanne? Do you still seriously have a place? You still seriously have a
I'm
place in your
saying,
heart for government?
I'm not saying I believe the opposite of you. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying perhaps you're being a little harsh.
Perhaps I'm being a little harsh. Well, aren't we allowed to be like that with the people we pay taxes to and the people we elect to run our things? Aren't we allowed to have
but
certain
I don't
expectations?
I don't think the way they've handled it is a complete and utter disaster.
I think it is. I think the whole world is worse.
Could have been much worse.
The whole world is worse off now because it was mismanaged by these cretins, not because it was run well. You really think they did a good job?
No, I'm not saying that again. I don't believe the opposite that you do. I just don't think it's as dramatic as you're saying.
So you kind of, okay, so it's not binary, but you're
no,
not.
No, exactly.
All right, well, either you're on their side or you're not. And I'm afraid these lunatics that are gathered in Cornwall in the UK to sit and talk to each other that costs everybody $100 million or whatever it is so that they can all get together. And what? Here's what Boris Johnson says. 1 billion doses for poorer countries, a big step towards vaccinating the world. Please. I mean, these leaders, I honestly don't, you couldn't imagine a bigger bunch of buffoons and if you tried. Have you seen what they all look like?
I will have to admit, I found one gem over this weekend that I thought, yeah, this is it. This is the gift that keeps on giving for me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily say it trumps the Biden photo with the Carters.
Oh, no, I know what you're talking about.
It's
oh,
at
gosh.
Least in my top five now. If you haven't seen it, it's a group photo of all of the world leaders at G7, well, some of them. But if you really start to squint at it, it's not the official photo that was taken where everyone posed. If you look at this one, we're showing it on YouTube. To me, it seems like Boris Johnson has just said something off color. And I can tell that by everyone else's expression around it.
Yeah.
Biden is just like, what are you saying? Trudeau's off to the corner, shrugging. Angela Merkel is so confused. And I'm thinking,
she's like, what?
My boy Boris said something that they didn't like. And that's at least where
I'm white, everybody. Everybody say group sex.
Yes.
Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah, at least that's where
brought up,
I got.
You brought up
my
Jeff Epstein. They all got a little bit uncomfortable.
This weekend.
I think those people are ridiculous, and I'm sorry, Leanne. If you feel like defending them and saying, "Well, they didn't do such a bad job," you go ahead. The whole thing could have been managed a whole lot better, and I'm sympathetic in respect to the fact that nobody got it exactly right, but some countries did manage it better than all those idiots you just saw in that picture. Some of them still aren't managing it very well. So, I mean, Australia's gone into like its fourth hard lockdown. And all it takes is one case in Australia that spreads.
Yeah.
And they're fucked. You know, I'm going to say.
I mean, this is an isolated island continent.
I'm going to say it again. Everybody in Sweden, the Swedish government were the enemy. Remember, people are like, oh, Sweden, how can they not be imposing a hard lockdown on their people? Well, Sweden did come out of this better by every single measurable metric. States in America that were not the hard lockdown states have come out of this measurably better. And they were old people states like Florida. Florida, where more old people live than any other state in America. They came out of it better. And remember, old people were the most vulnerable because they didn't lock down hard. They didn't shut down their economies. I mean, even, you know, Carol mentions this, that over the weekend, Theresa May said some things in Parliament in the UK. She hit the nail on the head. She was hugely critical of the way that her own government that she's a part of, the Conservative government in the UK, handled it. She said there's always going to be another variant. There's always going to be another disease. COVID is with us forever. But we cannot stay locked down forever. We cannot have mask mandates and social distancing and hand sanitizing forever. She said in a country like the UK, where they have enormous success in vaccinations. I mean, here, I'll give credit. So the UK have got a great vaccination program going. All the people who wanted vaccines have got them.
They're almost done there.
Correct. Yeah. So credit there. You see that they did properly. Good for them. But don't give them credit for the rest of it. And for God's sake, don't talk about how this thing could have been handled better without referring to the fact that we all believed China and the World Health Organization, because they need to pay. I'm going to say it again every day until I'm blue in the face. China must pay. That's got to be the line on everyone's lips. China must pay. Anyway, then the Middle East is in the news. Naftali Bennett is the new Prime Minister of Israel, and he has vowed to unite the nation. I saw a video with this guy during the war, the rocket launches that were happening from Gaza just the other day. And he's not a softie, eh? This guy's as tough as Benjamin Netanyahu. And anybody who thinks he's a softie is about to have a horrible surprise, too. He said his government will work for the sake of all the people, adding that the priorities would be reforms in education, health, and cutting red tape. The right-wing nationalist will lead an unprecedented coalition of parties backed by MPs in a 60-59 vote on Sunday. He succeeds Benjamin Netanyahu, who was forced out of office after 12 years. So Mr. Bennett, who's the leader of the Yamina Party, will be prime minister until September in 2023 as part of a power-sharing deal. He'll then hand over power to Yair Lapid, who is the head of the centrist Yesh Atid, for another 2 years. So Benjamin Netanyahu is out, Israel's longest-serving prime minister, but he will remain head of his Likud party and become leader of the opposition. So interesting times ahead for Israel. And Israel not deciding to go left, deciding to go right, like many countries are at the moment, because they're sick to goddamn death of all the dumb leftists. Finally, in the news, WhatsApp have launched a privacy campaign after a huge backlash. Did you see this coming, anybody? No. Well, WhatsApp have launched their first major privacy-focused ad campaign in the UK, follows a customer backlash against changes to the terms and conditions announced earlier this year. The platform also said it's standing firm against pressure from governments, including the UK government, to compromise on the way that it encrypts messages. Authorities should demand more security rather than less. That's what the WhatsApp boss, Will Cathcart, told the BBC. The first step of keeping people safe is you have to have strong security. And we think governments shouldn't be out there trying to encourage tech companies to offer weak security. They should be trying to encourage or even mandate that companies offer the strongest security possible. Yeah, I'm not so worried about governments in this respect. I'm worried about you, WhatsApp. You're owned by Mark Zuckerberg. And I don't know that you aren't selling my information to anybody who's willing to pay you for it. I don't mean like the contents of my message, but information about me, how old I am, what my financial situation is. You have all that information, and I don't believe that WhatsApp uses it for good. I think they use it for bad. I think they use it to make themselves extremely wealthy. And I would encourage anybody on that note to get themselves some kind of a VPN, a virtual private network, so that you encrypt your information and make it impossible for these companies to monetize you. You have to give permission if you want people to have that information. And I think we should all be in a position where we can ask and we can rather tell people whether we want them to have our info or not. Don't you think? Gareth, I thought you turned all soggy, says Tallulah Moon. I love that name, Tallulah Moon. I mean, I'm being criticized by someone with a name like Tallulah Moon. Anyway, she says...
No, Tallulah's fabulous. She has some rose quartz or crystals in the corner of her room. I like
that. She says, I thought you turned all soggy. It's great to hear you speak out. Yeah, I haven't changed one bit. Don't you worry about that. All right. We're going to turn our attention to something a lot more interesting than my ranting and raving this morning. And it is to talk to Dr. Hanan Bushkin, who we've had on before. Dr. Hanan, just so that we can let you boast a little bit about your credentials, he's a renowned psychologist in South Africa, but we're going to talk to him about his credentials a little bit before we get into everything else. A lot of people were asking the other day, you know, are you a psychologist, psychiatrist? Where did you study? Have you got a master's? You got a doctor's? What's the whole thing? Boast a little bit, because none of us have any qualifications of that nature on this show. You're the only one who's that qualified. Go ahead.
All right. So I do have my PhD in psychology. I've specialized in anxiety and trauma for 18 years. I've created or have researched a groundbreaking research on the meaning and purpose in life. We found that there's specifically 8 fundamental criteria to achieving meaningful, and that's going to be actually published in the European Journal of Psychology in the next couple of months. So that's pretty exciting.
Well, that's good stuff. I thought it would be worth giving you a chance to boast a little bit, because, you know, we have a lot of guests on the show and most of them are smarter than we are. And you're one of those people, and we wanted you to have a chance to explain where you come from and what you do, because we go straight into these issues every week without finding out about you. And we will through the course of the next couple of weeks too. But for today, I thought it was really interesting that we ended last week by talking a little bit about the way that people are reacting to all these changes in their lives, the way that people need to discover purpose and meaning. And we've been careful not to be too general. But right at the end of our conversation last week, you and I had a brief moment to highlight the savior complex. And I wonder how widespread this is. I wonder how many people are going through life not realizing that they have this. I think a lot of people are much more familiar with the victim complex, you know, where you feel sorry for yourself, where you always picture yourself at the losing end of every situation, where you think everybody else is out to get you. And this victim complex, while it is very widespread, and I think many people might be suffering from it or think they suffer from it, it's certainly more well known than the savior complex. What is a savior complex, and help us to define it and understand how it might be something we're suffering from or that someone we know might be suffering from at the moment?
Right. Well, it's actually a lot more common than people think, because it doesn't really show in terms of physical symptoms. But the savior complex is also known as the white knight complex or the white knight syndrome. And it's a deep desire and an addiction. And the key word is an addiction. It's a deep desire and addiction to save somebody, whether they need saving or don't need saving, to satisfy your own cravings. It must be noted that we all have a need to be acknowledged, to be liked, to be a part of the group. That's primitive. So the whole notion of I need to be needed or I need to be liked, and our message to everybody is like, yeah, that's what makes us humans. We're all the same. Sure. We all have a need for some form of feedback. Whether you are 1 day old or 101 day old, we all need feedback. Yeah. That's how we know our place in the world. That's our kind of our GPS coordinates. That's how we figure out where we're at and what we're about. Because I only know about myself and where I'm at based on feedback. Without feedback, we go crazy. Now, I heard that the quietest room in the world, it's I think it's in Sweden or something, where they have all these sound absorbers on the wall. You can't even hear yourself, your heartbeat. And apparently you can't be in that room for longer than 30 minutes. And I understand that. I get that. We function really, really well when we have consistent feedback. The moment we don't get feedback, or even worse, inconsistent feedback, that's when we go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So when people have the so-called savior complex or the white knight syndrome, and you have a deep desire to go and save someone, that's not the problem. The problem is when it is based on an addiction, on I need to, otherwise I'm going to fall apart. I need to, otherwise I'm going to get depressed. I need to, otherwise I'm going to get anxious. So when it becomes extreme, where it actually starts affecting yourself, so you do it at your own expense, whether it starts affecting your mood, your relationship, your work, your financial instability, that's when it becomes a big problem.
How do you know that it's become a problem? I mean, how can you identify that in your life? Because many of us are actually in a situation where we're trying to save people, not because we have a complex necessarily, but because people around us need the help. So how do you know when it's a problem?
So it's never a good idea to assess yourself, because, you know, we are so good at bullshitting ourselves into believing that our position is the ultimate. We can rationalize anything.
Absolutely.
I've seen drug addicts, you know, justify why one more hit. Alcoholics, just one more drink, and that goes on for 25 years. So we shouldn't judge us. We shouldn't use ourselves to judge whether we're doing well. Look around you. Ask the closest people around you. And when I say closest people, people that have your best interest at heart, your family, your best friends, your colleagues, see what's happening around there. Be honest with yourself. Are you financially where you want to be? Be honest with yourself. Are you in terms of career where you want to be? Be honest with yourself. Are you in terms of relationships where you want to be? And if the answer is no, then start questioning whether you have some form of patterns that don't work for you.
So how can you identify these people from the point of view of what attracts them? Because it's they're drawn to vulnerability. And although they think they're helping, sometimes they're doing a lot of damage too. You know, there are people in the world who, as we discussed last week, people who have a victim complex. And obviously the best combination from a point of satisfaction for both of these people is to have a victim and a savior together, because they complement each other in respect of each other's needs. But it's not necessarily – it's pathological for both of them too, because all they do is develop this very toxic need rather than a situation where they can break out of it and be individuals who are sovereign, who can make their decisions, be in control of their destiny, discover their purpose and meaning in life. Instead, they end up just feeding each other's paranoia.
Completely. And it's actually it's called the codependent relationship, where we are addictedly dependent on one another. And I must tell you, a lot of the times it just works. The dance works. Mm. You know, I'm a victim, you're a savior, and we dance it out and it works. But a lot of the times when it starts breaking down other necessities, as I said, other relationships, your work, your sense of purpose, your financial security, your health, that's when it becomes a problem. But people with savior complex or the white knife complex, they don't necessarily just look at for victims. What they naturally do, and sometimes the addiction is so severe, is that they meet well-abled individuals and they break them down just so they can go and fix it. I mean, how crazy it is.
Yeah.
So I'll go, and it happens, in a lot of relationships where an abuser will meet a whole person that will break them down just so they can patch them up and break them down just so they can patch them up.
What happens
like that with savior complex.
What is Munchausen's syndrome and how does that fit into this? Because I remember hearing about, you know, these mothers who do it by proxy. They say that their kids are ill or they make them ill so that they can be the saviors. Is that related in any way to this situation or is that a totally different system?
Very much. You know, we are all addicted. Every single person is addicted to a couple of things. And one, familiarity. We all love familiarity.
Mm.
And two, we all like to close loops. We all like to make sense of our world. That's what keeps us safe and going.
Yes.
The problem is what you define as an open loop. Pathologically ill people just think that everything is an open loop and they try to fix so many things, including their kids, that actually makes the kids sick. You know, there's a great saying, here's an Oprah moment. Don't give your kids what they can't give themselves because you're actually ruining them. You are fucking up your kids if you fix for them what they could be doing for themselves.
Mm.
You know, if I keep on the trainer wheels for my kids while they're riding a bike and I never take it off, yes, well done. They can ride a bike. But life is going to take them off for them. Life is going to take the trainer's wheels off for them. And then what are they going to do then? So don't do to anybody what they can do for themselves.
That's such an interesting thing. You know, this Munchausen's syndrome is interesting because what the parents are, they think they're doing so much good. And you see a lot of this going on right now. I wonder if parents don't suffer sometimes from a savior complex. Exactly the example you give now, these parents who make life as easy as possible for their kids. They put them in cotton wool. They make sure that they never really have to face any adversity or difficulty in their life. And they're always catered to. In other words, the children are in charge of the parents, not the other way around. And then these kids go out into the world and they think that everyone owes them. We see these people who are hugely entitled, who believe that everything should be rolled out like the red carpet in front of them and that life should be a bed of roses. And you meet these people in work and you meet these people in society and you meet these people if you're trying to have a relationship with one of them, God forbid, but if you do, it's impossible to deal with them. They're like eternally children. They're always in the mindset that they need to be catered for.
You know, I want to tell you that our job as parents is to train our kids for the real world, for how the world works. And the world works with reward and consequences and rules and structures. That's how the world works. If you give in to your kids at every time that they scream or shout or have a tantrum, then is that how the world works? Could you scream and shout at the cop? Could you scream and shout at the law? Could you scream and shout at your teacher? Could you scream and shout at your boss and get your own way? So what you're doing is, yes, you are protecting your kids from crying or from being sad or from being anxious or from feeling insecure, but you're not training them for how the world works. And when, as I said, life takes the trainer wheels off, your kids have got no idea on how to cope with it.
Yeah, this is pretty heavy stuff. And I think for many parents, this is the stuff that makes them uncomfortable. Parents especially, but then there are the rest of us too in society who look around and we go, we actually do have a lot of those kids around. Kids who are still on their training wheels trying to pretend they're adults. And
it's actually most, Gareth, it's actually most adults.
Yeah.
Most adults are on the trainer wheels.
Yeah.
Most adults have got no idea on how to cope without their assistance of X, Y, and Z. Most adults can't stand on their own 2 feet. I mean, we look like we're independent.
Mm-hmm.
We look like we're walking on our own 2 feet, but most adults are like that.
All right. I know Leanne and Sia have probably got some comments on this. Do either of you think you suffer from a savior complex sometimes?
Well, I hate to be the victim here. But I literally have been a victim of what you mentioned about someone taking someone who's whole and breaking them down in order to feel, in this case, it was control.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just so interesting that you put it that way. Another, just an anecdote, is a friend of mine who would, whenever we were at a bar, she would find the guy who looked the most down and out, most depressed looking guy sitting at the end of the bar with his head in his hands. And she'd make it her mission to make him happy that night. Oof. Or become involved in his life somehow. And that's just how she was. And you get people like that. Maybe she was looking for some kind of reward.
But you know what, Leanne, it might sound so admirable that she went up to a depressed guy and, you know, cheered him up. But how do we know that that depressed guy wasn't contemplating going back to his wife and she cheered him up and he told her to fuck off when he got home? So maybe she, you know, how do we know that, you know, when we're saving someone, we're doing what's best for them? Actually, we're doing what's best for us. It's completely selfish.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I see that now.
Yeah, you know, the motivation, motivation's something else.
Yeah, go ahead. My own learnings that I had the savior complex for a long time in my relationships. And it's up until when I learned that you build someone up and you help them. And just like nursing a little bird back to health, you are equipping them to fly and then they fly away. And I was left going, wait a minute, but after everything that I've done for you, you're just going to leave. But the lesson for me was actually, it's about my insecurities, because helping someone was where I got my sense of value, my sense of worth. You know, I got off on people saying thank you, and oh my gosh, you helped me so much. But now I know that a healthy dynamic in any sort is you being there is enough, and you are enough as you are. You don't have to give like that. So Dr. Khanan, what sort of work does someone have to do if they do suffer from a savior complex? What type of work do they have to do to get out of it in a healthy way?
So first of all, I'm going to mention that, again, we're thinking we're helping someone by being there or by giving them money or by giving them support. But how do you really know that it's helping them? It's helping them according to whose definition of helping them? Is it helping you because it makes you feel better, or is it helping them? I always say the first step is to get the person to share with you what they're needing, what they're bidding for. And never invest into somebody at the cost of your own well-being, physical well-being, mental well-being.
Hold on.
Because
that's
we all have limited amount of energy to invest. And if you invest into one, you don't have all the energy to invest into another.
Dr. So Hanan, I just want to stop you because you said something there that's hugely important. Like, this is a big, big deal for some people. Don't sacrifice your own health, well-being, happiness, etc., for someone else.
Right. Completely.
I mean, obviously, you know, we're within reason, there are exceptions to that. We don't want to make people think that that's a de facto rule. But you cannot make someone else happy at your own expense. You cannot make someone else pleased, excited, thrilled. You can't take away their anxiety if you're going to add to your own. This is a big deal because a lot of people are going through life thinking that they're martyrs. They're helping everyone else along.
You know what? The difference between adults and children is children really use their emotions as barometers to tell them whether what they're doing is right and wrong. Adults understand that emotions are random and irrelevant in this equation because adults understand that what feels right could be completely wrong and what feels wrong could be completely right. So gym feels really wrong, but it's right, and drugs feel really right, but it's wrong. You can't judge your feelings in judgment and whether what you're doing is right or wrong, and don't use other people's feelings as judgment too. Because as I put my kids' trainer wheels on their bike, they feel really good, but it doesn't mean it's right. And when I take the trainer wheels off, they feel really bad, but it doesn't mean it's wrong. So don't judge whether what you're doing is right or wrong based on your own or others' feelings. Judge whether what you're doing is wrong services the end goal. And if it services the end goal, irrespective of what you're feeling, that's right.
Beautiful. Woo. I think we're going to end it on that note. You can't get much more solid advice than that from anybody. So,
wow.
Yeah, that's terrific. Thanks, Dr. Hanan. Always good to see you, and we'll check in with
you
next week.
Nice to see you guys.
Amazing. There's some solid stuff for you, huh? How about that, Sia, Leanne, everybody?
I feel like I've just been to church, baby.
Yeah. That ending.
Well, I mean, society. Society is really, are you an adult or are you in child mode? I think that's so relevant to almost every discussion. And you know what Dr. Hanan was saying there about what feels right is sometimes wrong and what feels wrong is sometimes right cannot be repeated enough.
Yes.
I love the example he gave about how going to gym feels wrong because it's like, oh, I don't want to do this. This is a pain in the backside. It doesn't feel
hard.
Good. It's hard,
it's
right?
Sore.
You get out, you're tired. But it's right. And taking drugs feels amazing. You're on this high. You're having a wonderful time. You're enjoying yourself. But it's wrong. So
even just creating that conversation that you know you need to have, a conversation about reaffirming your boundaries in a relationship, a conversation about being honest and confessing to something. It feels wrong. You're dreading it, but it's the right thing to do.
And I
can
wonder,
you imagine how many people have sat before Dr. Hanan and said, but it just feels right. Mm-hmm. He's like, warning bells.
Well, he said that he was this clear about it. He said the definition of a child and an adult is that they can differentiate between the way that something feels and what it actually is, whether or not it's good for them. I think that's so important. We live in a society today where we are encouraged by many in society to just accept what people's feelings are as being the truth on face value, or because we're expected to trust them because they're supposed to trust their feelings. It's madness. Just because you say something feels X, Y, and Z to you doesn't mean it's true. I'm terribly sorry. That's hugely important information. In this world right now, we could do with a whole lot more of that wisdom and a whole lot less of the stupidity of people going, it feels X, Y, and Z to me, so you have to respect it. Nonsense. You're not a child. Take off your training wheels. Very good. All right, when we come back,
that's
we got
to know on a Monday.
That's how we start our Mondays here. We don't fuck around. And you can be part of the conversation every Monday. You can join us on YouTube. Oh, quickly, Leanne, do the like and subscribe for us because we need that done. Here she is, Leanne Moll, our expert.
Well, I actually saw, what did it? It was a stat. Only 40 likes and 205 on this chat. Please remember to like, comment, and subscribe.
Yes, for God's sake, how embarrassing. Yes. Those numbers are embarrassing. And then people say to me, is that how many people listen to you? I go, no. That's only because we started YouTube in April. This is our newest of our various platforms, but we want it to grow like the rest of them. I mean, let's not be embarrassing here. So tell everybody you know to come and watch the channel, like and subscribe. Even if you don't come and watch it live every day, you might listen to the podcast, but come on. like and subscribe. We want to hear from you. All right, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. CliffCentral.com, Monday morning. It's almost the middle of June. Solstice next Monday. CliffCentral.com.